freedom of speech and religion are important rights for Christians because we are called to lift up Jesus.
Finnish lawmaker Dr. Paavi Rossinen talking about her presentation at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
I have been a member of the Parliament of Finland for 27 years, but now, suddenly, I'm facing three criminal charges for sharing my deeply held beliefs based on the Bible. At the trial, the prosecutor tried to deny the core message of the Bible, the teaching of law and gospel. I defend the right to confess the Christian faith and its teaching on the human being.
You can meet and hear Dr. Paavi Rossinen at the 2022 Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 24th and Saturday, June 25th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org.
Fathers should no longer be perceived as unneeded, second-class citizens. Dads are both essential and foundational. They're not optional or unwanted.
I think the world would tell us that being a mother is really kind of dangerous because there's this idea that any sacrifice of yourself could potentially erase yourself.
Christians have always found themselves in very, very difficult times. The blessing of living in these times is it's never been clear what is church and what is not church, and what is Christ and what is not Christ.
And we can literally say that what we see here is fleeting and passing quickly, but there is a new world coming, and it's guaranteed by the resurrection of Christ.
Suburban homemakers tending to their chickens, love issues, etc.
I think in any other context, billionaire Elon Musk would be considered left of center, perhaps even a progressive. He buys into a lot of progressive issues. And yet, progressive Twitter seems not only aghast, but downright terrified that this billionaire has just bought Twitter for $44 billion. Why is the left and the media reacting as they are to Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter? Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in live on this Thursday afternoon, the 28th of April. We'll be talking with Mark Hemingway of Real Clear Investigations about Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter. Then it's our series responding to Roman Catholic proof text today, Matthew 19:12 and 1 Corinthians 7 on marriage and the celibacy of priests with Dr. Stephen Parks of Concordia University, Irvine, California. Then we'll wrap up today's show. Looking forward to Sunday morning, according to the three-year lectionary, talking with Dr. Carl Fekenture about Jesus appearing to seven disciples in John chapter 21. Joining us to discuss Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter, Mark Hemingway, senior writer for Real Clear Investigations, author of a recent column for The Federalist titled "The Washington Post's Repulsive Defense of Twitter Execs Makes Even Elon Musk Look Good." Mark, welcome back.
Glad to be back.
Only 22% of Americans are on Twitter, and of those, only 24% of Twitter accounts actually tweet on a regular basis. Why is Elon Musk's purchase of this social media platform considered so important?
Well, for one thing is that Twitter itself, even though its user base is relatively small compared to something like Facebook, has become sort of an echo chamber, particularly for the media. And it sort of shapes elite opinion in a way that's, like, you know, noticeable. I mean, it's pretty crazy. I mean, for someone like me that has a fairly active Twitter presence because I'm a reporter and I do media criticism and stuff. In fact, if you're a private citizen that's not overly interested in politics, I would, you know, recommend not getting on Twitter. It's kind of a uniquely toxic platform in that regard. But if you are interested in that sort of thing, you can, like, plug into Twitter and, like, when breaking news happens, like some big news story or something, if you're following a lot of journalists, you can almost just, like, immediately, it's like plugging into the Matrix or something. You can just watch, like, the narrative shape in real time. And what's weird is, you know, that narrative that the, you know, elite corporate media or whatever settles on might well often be, like, completely divorced from the obvious facts of what's going on. And for that reason, Twitter has been, I think, uniquely harmful to the sort of discourse that we've been dealing with in the last several years.
Well, Jeff Bezos owns the Washington Post, the Sulzbergers own the New York Times, Rupert Murdoch owns the Wall Street Journal. How is this billionaire purchase of a media platform any different?
Well, yes, that's sort of the good question to be asking right now. I mean, there were some eyebrows raised about like what conflicts of interest might be posed when Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post, one of the most influential media outlets in the country, you know, in the last decade, but nothing compared to like what's happened with Elon Musk. I mean, part of the problem here is that, I mean, some of that is due to the fact that Elon Musk is sort of a uniquely eccentric and outspoken guy, but I mean, like, what billionaire isn't eccentric? But more than that, really what it's about is that so much of the political narratives, many of which were shaped on Twitter itself in the last 6 years or so, but in sort of the post-Trump era, were, you know, so centered on this concept of disinformation. And disinformation has become kind of an industry unto itself. It's basically become like big disinformation, essentially, where you have all these consultants and you know, media people that like specialize in dealing with the problem here. And like, ultimately, what's happened is that they took a concept, disinformation, which originally came from sort of the espionage intelligence world, applied it to domestic politics, and then, you know, have been consistently making these arguments that the reason why people vote against things that, you know, the ruling class doesn't like is that they're somehow subject to disinformation. And so many times this, you know, quote unquote disinformation label is being, you know, thrown around without any justification or, you know, even context that explains it. The classic example, of course, involves Twitter, which was the Hunter Biden laptop story that came out, you know, a couple of weeks before the 2020 election, where Twitter banned anyone from even sharing the link to the story from the New York Post. And, you know, meanwhile, 50 intelligence professionals in the United States that were notable signed a letter saying this must be Russian disinformation. Well, of course, we now know that the story turned out to be true. Twitter and, you know, other online platforms literally censored it. And it was more an attempt to influence the election on their behalf, you know, whether they want to consciously admit that or not, than it was to deal with quote unquote disinformation. So that's kind of the thing that Elon Musk is dealing with. I mean, Elon Musk came out and said, you know, it was obviously inappropriate for Twitter to have banned that story. And everyone like sort of lost their mind. And then the response that has been, well, isn't Elon Musk going to deal with disinformation? This isn't really a controversial thing that these social media networks have overstepped their boundaries. I mean, Facebook was also banning people for saying that COVID, you know, might be the result of a lab leak. And they were claiming that that was, you know, disinformation as well. And again, that's another story that's turned out to be true. So time and again, the attempts to quote unquote police disinformation have been more motivated by politics than they have been by, you know, actual attempts to dissuade people from believing things that are, you know, are harmful to the body politic.
Is Musk's new role with Twitter a major victory for social conservatives?
No. I mean, this is the thing here. I wrote this in my piece today, basically. It's like, I think that you would be a complete and total fool for seeing Musk as a champion for any particular set of values that you think is going to, you know, restore America to, you know, whatever status of ordered liberty and cultural health that you think, you know, we should have, particularly if you're to the right of the spectrum. But the fact of the matter is that social media networks are sort of the canary in the coal mine for this, which is we have established this ruling class order in this country that is sort of obviously corrupt from anyone who's, you know, looking at it from the outside. And this system is set up to basically completely benefit the left and, you know, wealthy elites, essentially. So like information that threatens the political candidates preferred by wealthy liberals in this country gets censored as, you know, disinformation, and there's nothing that you can do about it. The response is, oh, well, Twitter's a private platform. It's a private company. They can do what they want. Elon Musk coming along and saying, you know, I'm going to buy Twitter and I'm going to make free speech a core tenet of this. I have my doubts that, you know, he will follow through on this to a degree that I would like, but the fact that he's a billionaire who's, you know, purchasing one of the major social media networks and even saying this out loud, and the fact that it's causing so much anguish, has done a lot to just expose what's going on in terms of just how corrupt the system is. And it really confirms a lot of things for a lot of people. So the reality is that Elon Musk, while I don't think he's a particular champion for any sort of values, and I don't think he should necessarily be trusted, he just by, you know, speaking out and saying in defense of a concept of free speech that would have been near universally agreed upon by Americans, even as, you know, recently as 10 or 15 years ago, he has proven that he's a threat to a system that benefits a lot of people that I think are a threat to most Americans, essentially. So he poses a threat to the existing order, which I think is, you know, good for the average American, basically. But that all may change. You know, he's a mercurial guy, and we'll see whether he follows through on his commitment to free speech. But, you know, he's saying a lot of the right things.
So we have the richest man in the world buying a enormous company that barely makes any money. Tell us the story of how Musk decided to buy Twitter.
Well, it's really kind of a complicated story. I mean, one is, it's interesting, is that he seems to actually like the platform and enjoy using it. I mean, he does a lot of sort of, I don't know how to describe it. It's not, well, I mean, it's kind of unfair to call it trolling, essentially, but he does post a lot of like edgy things. He posts a lot of funny things. He uses it kind of in a way that Trump did, you know, to sort of promote himself, personal brand, and his business deals. You know, he'll dribble out pieces of information that are useful to him, you know, in his business. I mean, to the extent that he's been rung up by the, you know, Securities and Exchange Commission for some of his tweets. And I think that just by being on the platform, he saw how sort of, you know, toxic it had become. And he saw how, like, you know, subservient it had been to sort of this corrupt order that benefits, you know, a bunch of, you know, liberal elites. And I think he, on some level, believes that's not good for America, you know, even if he has his own, you know, uniquely large self-interest. He says he prefers to be apolitical. He's actually not given that much money to political causes. And to the extent that he has, he's sort of spread that money around among both parties, including Obama. So, you know, it's not like he's some, you know, hardcore right winger. But I do think he's run up against the problems of sort of the sclerotic, politically correct ideology that governs America and I think is holding it back. And remember, Tesla was originally headquartered in California and he moved the entire operation to Texas because, I mean, he got tired of dealing with California's like completely onerous and absolutely insane state government relative to other states. I mean, like, I don't even think it's even like controversial, you know, to point out that California's regulations that go so far beyond every other state, Democratic or Republican in the country. I think that he sees this as an opportunity to kind of restore some sort of balance to the force as it was. And, you know, I just think he got invested in the platform personally. And I also think he's smart enough to realize that just by exposing what's going on at Twitter, you can have a profound effect sort of across the sort of chokehold that tech companies and the media have on these kinds of platforms. It already, you know, people have been commenting since, you know, he made the offer a couple of days ago and they locked the Twitter's code or whatever. All of a sudden, all these conservatives are being unbanned. All of, you know, my wife, who has a very large Twitter following, I think has gained like 30,000 followers in just a couple of days, which, you know, suggests that there was some, you know, sort of major throttling and algorithmic nonsense going on to suppress people on one side of the spectrum. And I think that once people realize like what that's going on, it's going to be harder and harder to hide all the stuff that's going on elsewhere. And I think it will have, you know, positive ripple effects throughout society. I don't know what Musk's long game here is. Maybe he does believe in this stuff. You know, it's also entirely possible that it'd just be a good business proposition for him. He says he wants to take the company private, but Twitter has, you know, historically underperformed in terms of its stock value and other things relative to other companies. Maybe he can take it private if he can improve the product in a number of years, you know, put it back in, on the market through another IPO or something, and it will, you know, it'll explode in value. I mean, you know, say what you want. I mean, Musk has routinely shocked and astounded his critics in terms of him being able to prosper and make money in ways that no one imagined even a decade ago. I mean, his ascent from where he was even 10, 20 years ago, I mean, even starting out as a rich kid in Silicon Valley with PayPal to where he is now, I mean, I don't think anyone would have predicted it. And he's proven himself to be unusually canny.
Mark Hemingway is our guest, senior writer for Real Clear Investigations. We're talking about Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter. How have progressives and the media responded to Musk's actions? We'll get to that next. You can meet and hear Bill Barr, Albert Mohler, Pavi Rossinen, Chris Roseborough, Brian Wolfmiller, Joel Bierman, and Will Wheaton at the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 24th and Saturday, June 25th in Chicago. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, June 24th and 25th at Concordia University, Chicago.
Did you know that many LCMS military personnel and their families are unable to receive Word and Sacrament ministry due to the lack of LCMS chaplains? Ministry to the Armed Forces is looking for pastors who will answer the call to serve as a chaplain to provide word and sacrament ministry to the men and women who selflessly serve our nation. Find out more about this exciting ministry by contacting me, Chaplain Craig Mueller, at lcmschaps@lcms.org. That is lcmschaps@lcms.org.
Lutheranism in the public square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
For your next family vacation, consider Our Beach House, a charming three-bedroom vacation rental on beautiful Siesta Key. Just off Sarasota, Florida, Siesta Key Beach, consistently voted America's best, is just 100 steps away. Whether you're watching the sunset over the Gulf of Mexico or frolicking in the warm surf, you and your family will fall in love with Siesta Key. Check us out at SiestaKeyRentalGenie.com or call Virginia at 941-266-1858.
America's tradition of liberty depends on having colleges and universities that equip young people for the responsibilities of freedom. At Concordia University Chicago, freedom is a pillar of our education. We prepare our students to live as free, self-governing citizens. I'm Dr. Rachel Ferguson, Director of the Free Enterprise Center at Concordia Chicago. I invite you to visit us. Discover what it means for freedom to become a pillar of your future. Learn more at cuchicago.edu.
Christianity and culture will be thoroughly discussed at the 2022 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. Dr. Albert Mohler on Christian Silence, the Progressive Assault on the Constitution with Bill Barr, Dr. Pabbi Rossinen on Christians in the Public Square, and the Lutheran Worldview with Dr. Joel Bierman. Making the Case is Friday, June 24th and Saturday, June 25th at Concordia University Chicago. Registration is $150 and includes meals on Friday night and Saturday afternoon and evening. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call Lutheran Public Radio 618-223-8385. Mark Hemingway is our guest. We're talking about Elon Musk's takeover of Twitter. So, Mark, how have progressives, in particular the media, responded to Musk's actions here?
It's absolutely insane. Basically, what happened is Musk has come out a bunch of times, you know, and said some variation of free speech is good. He's even made these statements where he says, like, you know, I think these platforms should be neutral. So what that means is whatever you're doing on the platform means you're going to be sort of equally offending people on the extreme fringe of the right and in the extreme fringe of the left, right? And everyone has interpreted these comments to say that this means that under Musk, it's going to be like some insane free speech absolutism. There's going to be no content moderation whatsoever. He's going to allow people to harass other people. He's going to allow people to, you know, use racial slurs on things. And he said nothing of the sort. Joy Reid, MSNBC host, basically has accused him of white supremacy. And there's been all this like talk about him being, you know, in support of apartheid and other stuff because he was originally from South Africa. I mean, there's no evidence for this whatsoever. I mean, they're just completely slandering the man. And the freak out again is really, really instructive. The guy comes in and he says, look, I think people on the right and people on the left should be able to express their views equally on these platforms. And the people who are clearly on the left, the people who are clearly in power, are losing their ever living minds. Like they just, this cannot happen. Again, it's just revealing. I guess they feel like if they aren't able to suppress the views of their opposition, then, you know, they're going to, you know, lose the power that they have. And if that's how bad the system is, well, then maybe they should lose some power.
Tell us about the Washington Post's role in this whole story.
So this was particularly insane. And this is, you know, sort of the focus of what I wrote about today. So basically what happened was everybody is talking about Musk buying Twitter everywhere, but especially on Twitter, right? Well, there's a guy that hosts a popular YouTube political show named Sagar and Jetty. It's called Turning Points. And he posted a screenshot of a political story about what happened at Twitter headquarters when they announced that Musk was buying the service. And there's a woman who's a top lawyer at Twitter named Vijaya Gad. I'm not exactly sure how to say her name, but Gad, you know, was previously, it's been well known that she was one of the people that was driving a lot of the political decisions at Twitter. In fact, you know, right before the election, Politico had previously profiled her, you know, under the headline, "Is Twitter going full resistance? Here's the woman driving the change." And it's well known that she was intimately involved in both the decision to kick Trump off of Twitter and the decision to ban the New York Post. So, you know, she'd long been suspected of being a big political actor behind the scenes at Twitter. So, and Jetty posted a tweet about how, highlighting the fact that, according to Politico, she literally cried in an internal meeting when it was announced that Musk would be taking over the platform. He pointed out that she was the top censorship advocate at Twitter in a tweet. Musk himself responded to Njeti's tweet, and he said, he didn't say anything about Gad specifically. He simply said, "Suspending the Twitter account of a major news organization for publishing a truthful story was obviously incredibly inappropriate." Okay. I mean, the previous CEO of Twitter, Jack Dorsey, had testified before Congress that it was a total mistake, was the words that he used. So, you know, the fact that Musk is saying this is, it shouldn't be controversial at all. And then later that same day, Mike Cernovich, who's another guy that runs a, you know, large sort of right-wing Twitter account, noted that Twitter's current deputy general counsel is Jim Baker, not to be confused with the former Secretary of State, but Jim Baker, who was formerly the general counsel of the FBI during the whole Trump-Russia scandal. And I, you know, I won't go into the details, but suffice to say, Jim Baker, being the FBI's lawyer that was supposed to be approving FISA warrants and things like that to spy on people, did not cover himself in glory in that position when he was at the FBI. And so Musk responded to Cernovich's tweet pointing this out, saying, "Sounds pretty bad," right? He didn't comment on his current performance at Twitter or anything like that. He just said, "Sounds pretty bad." You know, it was not exactly a committed opinion of the guy. So the Washington Post ran a story the next day. Headline: Elon Musk boosts criticism of Twitter executives prompting online attacks. The targeting of employees by Musk's massive Twitter megaphone is a major concern for workers. And it went on and on. Basically, the thrust of the article was that Musk was subjecting Twitter executives to online and harassment abuse by merely commenting on their performance at the company, which is just absolutely insane. I mean, Vijaya Gad, the lawyer who was advocating censorship at Twitter, I mean, Twitter pays her $17 million a year. She's gone on the Joe Rogan podcast. I mean, she's very much a public figure at Twitter and otherwise. And, you know, why is she getting paid $17 million a year if not to be publicly accountable as an executive at the company? So the whole article was just like absolutely insane. You know, never mind that Elon Musk isn't allowed to have an opinion on the deputy general counsel of the FBI. I mean, the whole thing is just bananas. I mean, it basically boils down to the Washington Post somehow thinks it's horrible that millionaire tech executives must be subject to public criticism from, you know, billionaire tech entrepreneurs. It's just absolutely bananas. But I mean, the real thing here, though, is to obviously it's to portray Musk as somehow uniquely harmful because, again, he's a threat to the existing order, and to simply make it clear that, whether they mean to or not, that the media sees the people worth defending here are the, you know, millionaire tech executives that prop up, again, the sort of censorship regime that protects the liberal worldview that also, you know, is what the Washington Post sells on a daily basis. It's just pure class affiliation on the part of journalists, and it's really sort of alarming that basically the Washington Post would team up in favor of the tech executives that are pushing censorship and against the one guy in Silicon Valley that's saying, we should really work harder on having free speech.
Do we really know at all what Musk plans to do with Twitter in general and in particular with free speech?
No, we don't. It would be virtually impossible for him, for a variety of reasons, to turn Twitter into a complete and total free speech platform where you can literally say anything so long as it's legal. It's just not the business model. It's not the way that it would work. It's not a service that anyone would want to use. Could he go a long way toward making it more transparent, to making it more fair, such that people on the right aren't censored overtly? Or the big thing that people have been concerned about is that so much of the stuff happens behind the scenes via algorithm. So you get quote unquote shadow banned, even though you have a ton of followers that make it so that your tweets never get seen by the people that, you know, you're supposed to be reaching. I just can't imagine that making a few tweaks to the algorithm so that it's, you know, fair would be difficult. Further, Twitter, unlike a lot of social media platforms, has done very poorly in terms of, you know, business-wise. It made a significant amount of revenue in the first quarter of this year. It just came out, but its expenses just, you know, were exploding such that, you know, it's still losing money hand over fist. I mean, there's a lot that could be done to just improve the basic features of the service. And so Musk has made some, you know, rumblings about how, like, when you have private messages on Twitter that are known as direct messages, Twitter has talked about making those encrypted so that they're, you know, they can't be hacked easy. He's talked about maybe adding an edit button. As it stands now, if you tweet something and there's a typo in it, there's nothing you can do about it but delete the whole tweet and start again. And if, you know, the tweet gets seen by a lot of people, you know, you can't really do anything about it. So, you know, he's talked about just making some sort of like basic service changes to make the place better. And I think there's a lot of support for that. And I, you know, don't know why this is causing so many people to freak out, other than, you know, the fact of the matter is that, you know, again, the legacy media and, you know, the liberal elites in this country do want social media platforms to be some kind of ministry of truth that polices what people can say online if it threatens, you know, the regime or whatever.
Finally, with about a minute here, for his part, you mentioned Jack Dorsey, one of the founders of Twitter, has expressed his confidence in Musk's ability to lead the company. What do you make of that?
Dorsey might be even more mercurial than Elon Musk. He's an interesting guy. I mean, he obviously presided over a lot of the disastrous stuff that Twitter did while he was there and as CEO, in terms of the New York Post and banning and kicking Trump off Twitter and all of that. But he seems to, in recent months, he's been tweeting a lot of like cryptic things that indicate that he's had sort of a wake-up call, you know, that he's, you know, aware of a lot of the same problems that Musk has been expressing concern about. And he seems to kind of be on the same page all of a sudden. I don't know exactly what prompted that. But it's also true that Dorsey, even though he's no longer CEO, is still on the board of Twitter. Something like 9 of the 11 board members on Twitter's board were brought on the board under his tenure as CEO. And it's perceived that the board has a lot of allegiance to him. So the fact that the Twitter board went ahead and basically agreed with Musk's offer to buy it after there were some initial rumblings that they were going to fight it suggests that Dorsey may have had a lot of pull behind the scenes to do something about it. But I don't know. I mean, again, this is all pure speculation, but he's an interesting cat for sure.
Mark Hemingway is senior writer for Real Clear Investigations. He's author of a recent column for The Federalist titled "The Washington Post Repulsive Defense of Twitter Execs Makes Even Elon Musk Look Good." You can read it at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives, and you can follow Mark on Twitter at Heminator, HEMINATOR. Mark, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Stephen Parks joins us next in our series, Responding Roman Catholic Proof Text Today, Matthew 19:12 and 1 Corinthians 7, on the marriage of priests and priestly celibacy.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
In John 5:39, Jesus states, "You search the Scriptures because you think that in them you have eternal life. It is they that bear witness about me." The Issues Etc. book of the month for April is The Messiah, Revealing Jesus in the Old Testament. This new resource is published by Concordia Publishing House. Their phone number, 1-800-325-3040, or learn more about The Messiah at issuesetc.org. The Messiah, Revealing Jesus in the Old Testament, the Issues Etc. book of the month.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our Christian faith is under constant attack, and we must be proactive in keeping our children in the church. At Faith Lutheran School in Plano, Texas, we believe that an education rooted in God's Word is one that stands against the very gates of hell. Nothing in this world is more important. Offering a rigorous classical Lutheran education, we provide in-person and live online remote learning opportunities for preschool through grade 12. To learn more, visit flsplano.org, flsplano.org.
The Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's Life Ministry is thousands of people sharing Christ's love and mercy and giving witness to our Lord's creation of life his design for marriage and the family, and the God-given value of all human life from conception to natural death. Working with many partners, LCMS Life Ministries sponsors human care efforts that meet the needs of body and soul and provides resources and educational events for all ages. To learn more, email lifeministry@lcms.org and visit lcms.org/life.